You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Several high-profile cases involving police-related shootings and deaths sparked protests and debate all across our country about law enforcement, race relations, but also how police are trained when it comes to interacting with people who suffer from mental health issues. And with a recent police-involved shooting here in Boise, these same questions are being asked. Joining us today to talk more about this are Dr. Lisa Bostaff and Dr. William King. They are criminal justice professors at Boise State University. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Gemma.
Lisa, I'd like to begin with you. I mean, and I think we should note that neither of you can speak about the recent officer-involved shooting in Boise. With that said, for folks who are not aware, this recent police shooting did involve a Black man who is a refugee. His family says that he suffers from mental health issues. They go on to say that the police did not know how to breach the language barrier or deal with his mental health crisis. Dr. Bostaff, you have spent the last year on the advisory board to the governor's Behavioral Health Council, as well as being a part of the criminal justice work group. I am assuming that this topic around mental health and police interactions came up quite a bit.
Yes, it did, Gemma. In fact, we had numerous conversations on the criminal justice work group that were focused on policing response to individuals with mental health issues. It's a concern of both mental health providers and the Department of Health and Welfare, but also a significant concern for policing professionals when these uses of force happen. It affects everybody involved, and people want to, both community members and police officers want to avoid these forms of use of force.
And you know, Dr. King, we have heard over the last 18 months all across the country about this idea of defunding the police. I know part of your expertise is in the area of looking at disbanding police agencies. Can you talk to us, though, about this idea of defunding? And frankly, is that the proper terminology, or are more folks thinking of this idea as, you know, maybe we should be looking at reallocating resources?
Great question. It's more a question of reallocating resources. That I know of, there are only two agencies to head in the U.S. to had significant budget declines, apparently from defunding the police movement. One of them was Austin, Texas. For a lot of other agencies, their budgets haven't been significantly decreased. The issue of shifting funding maybe out of policing towards community improvement and mental health still holds, but I think people are very interested in that. I don't see great movement in most cities or places across the U.S. that they're actually doing that, however.
Well, and a recent study by the Treatment Center Advocacy Group found that people with untreated mental illness are 16 times more likely to be killed during a police encounter than other civilians who are approached or stopped by law enforcement. Dr. Bostaff, that seems like a shockingly high number.
Yes, it does. I have not seen that study, so I can't really comment on what could be the difference in that study as opposed to other studies that have demonstrated that about 25% of use of force incidents as reported by people who have had contact with the police. But also, I'm sorry, 25% of fatal use of force incidents, if you look at the Washington mm-hmm. Post database, involve people with a perceived mental health issue. So a 25% part of all of those fatal force uses, force incidents have involved people with mental health issues. I don't know what that would equate to in terms of how many times compared to people who do not have mental health illnesses, but the 16 times number, I would have to see that study before I could mm-hmm. take a look at how they arrived at that.
And I appreciate that. You know, Dr. King, police are not trained to be mental health professionals. And I think that there's an argument to be made that, frankly, they shouldn't be trained to be mental health professionals. So when we look at things like reallocating financial resources, have you or any of your colleagues potentially looked into what it would look like if mental health professionals were brought in to police departments to work alongside law enforcement when these interactions, you know, arise? And is that something that could work? Do we even know?
So there are different layers to that. One of them involves trying to train police officers to become kind of experts in dealing with people in crisis. Mm-hmm. And the model for that is crisis intervention teams, and that's a question for Dr. Bostaff, because that's her area. The other flavor of that is having mental health or social worker, mental health professionals or social workers team up with the police, kind of like the CAHOOTS model in Washington State, or having just mental health workers or social workers on their own as kind of first responders, going out and answering calls in lieu of the police. I think the CIT question is a good one for maybe Dr. Bostaff to answer.
So Dr. Bostaff, can we talk a little bit about that, about training police officers, I guess, to do this crisis intervention? I know we've heard about it, but I wonder how effective that can be, because police officers have so many other things that they need to be thinking of when it comes to the general safety of our community when these crises happen.
Sure. Policing professionals have a lot on their plate when they're responding to any incident or any call that comes in or that they're dispatched to, much of which is unknown to them when they're arriving on the scene. The research that's been done on CIT, we really have to kind of divide into two different types of research because they have different outcomes. So the research on CIT, which really what CIT is going in and training officers on knowledge about mental health issues or behavioral health issues. Some of the common signs and symptoms of behavioral health issues, how people commonly may respond when they're having a crisis. And then also training on de-escalation techniques, how to kind of bring the pressure and the stress down in that situation, negotiation techniques, and really importantly, community-based resources that can provide treatment, crisis intervention, other options, and other resources for officers in that situation. And then finally, really the whole kind of goal with CIT is to reduce the number of arrests that happen, reduce the numbers of citizen injuries or officer injuries that may result from interactions that include a use of force. So these two groups of research really fall into research that's been done where they ask officers their perceptions of how confident they feel responding to an incident with a person who has a behavioral health issue, primarily a mental health issue, and how they believe that they would handle their perception of their use of force, their perception of how often they're using arrests. And what we find is in those studies, officers who have CIT training self-report that they are arresting less frequently, they are using force less frequently, that they feel more confident in their ability to respond to these situations, and that they're more satisfied with their response to this situation. So in that body of study where they're asking officers to report out, we see really strong effects for CIT training. In the other body of research that's smaller, primarily because we really lack data from policing agencies, when they go in and they pull police reports, reports on use of force, arrest reports, and they look at officers with CIT and officers without CIT training, what they find is no difference in effect, no significant difference in the in the number of arrests or the likelihood of arrest, no significant difference in use of force. So we have a disconnect between how officers perceive what they're doing and what we see in the official data in terms of actual outcomes. And so we're at a point where we're not really able to rectify those differences at this point in time.
And is this something that we're seeing in law enforcement agencies in Idaho, this CIT training?
Yes. Yes, we are seeing CIT training across the state. It has been sporadic. There hasn't been a concerted effort by the Idaho Sheriff's Association or the Idaho Chiefs of Police Association, kind of like this huge push, we're going to get everybody trained in CIT. Although I will note that in the Idaho Behavioral Health Council's recommendations, a review and possible expansion of CIT across the state is one of the recommended areas. As a researcher, I have to tell you that one of my concerns with an overall push, like in Portland, the Portland Police Bureau trained everybody in CIT, all of their officers, as opposed to select officers or officers who volunteer. Mm. The problem for us as researchers and as public, if we want to analyze public policy, is that if everybody gets trained in CIT, we don't have any comparison group. We can't really measure whether CIT is effective in any agency if we don't have a group of officers who don't do CIT. Because if everybody has CIT, we can't figure out if there's a difference between having CIT and not having CIT. The other issue with CIT right now in research is that a lot of places, everyone is doing CIT a little bit differently. And that means we also can't compare across agencies. And that makes it a little more difficult to look at effectiveness.
Before I let both of you go, and I'm whoever would want to maybe tackle this last question, is it also fair to say, though, that there's something wrong within our mental health system? And what I mean by that is that people with severe mental illness seem to be left to deteriorate sometimes to a point where they have these interactions with law enforcement that many times can be a fatal interaction. So where do we also need to be looking into the mental health system within our country and not just the police system within our country?
Dr. King, do you want to hop on that or do you want me to? No, why don't
you take that one?
Well, I think everyone recognizes that the deinstitutionalization movement that began in the late 60s and went through primarily through the 1980s did not occur along with the necessary expansion of community-based services for people with mental health issues or behavioral health issues. And because we as a country didn't invest at the same time in those community solutions at the same time that we deinstitutionalized, that meant that people were who need ongoing care or need care in a crisis situation oftentimes didn't have community resources available to them. Now, here in Idaho, we have started to address that several years ago with the creation of crisis centers around the state. And now I think everyone has recognized here in Idaho that there are some significant changes that need to occur within our behavioral health systems and how we respond to people with behavioral health needs. And that's why the Idaho Behavioral Health Council was put together by Governor Little to address these issues and to take a systemic view statewide of what is needed, because the resources that are available to people vary greatly, as you know, depending on where you live in the state.
And so I'm going to have to.
That's the purpose.
And I'm going to have to let both of you go. We are running out of time. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Dr. Lisa Bostaff and Dr. William King. They are criminal justice professors at Boise State University. More Idaho Matters next.